the table and shoved himself out of the chair, around the corner and out the door, gasping as if struck when the warm, body-damp air shifted from hot to cold. More cold was soon to follow. Anduin looped around to the back of the inn, forgetting it was soggy and marshy there and grunting as his boots were nearly sucked off his feet. The ground beneath him grew suddenly slick and hard, and his arms pinwheeled as he managed to catch himself just before the humiliating fall.
"Hello, Jerek. I can explain. Through the king, you do not have to explain."
Jaina's voice dropped to a steely whisper as she took him by the arm, spinning him away from the ice she had shimmered across the ground. They stood together, huddled under the narrow overhang of the roof, crickets and frogs blissfully unaware of who had just interrupted their song.
"What did you do to your hair?"
she drew back, laughing.
"Boot polish,"
he muttered, pulling the hood down hard and avoiding her gaze.
"And I suppose Jerek is a very stupid name."
"No, I think it's great. Really suits you." Jaina had the grace to cover her next guffaw with her fingertips.
"It's all right, Anduin. Your secret is safe with me."
His eyes blew wide.
"Jaina, listen, I know we quarreled. I know we don't always see eye to eye, but surely you can understand."
Sighing, he leaned back against the inn. "Sometimes I need this. Sometimes I need to be a boy again. I think about all the soldiers giving their life to serve the Alliance, and I think, how? How can they be so young? Those three brave souls inside, they think they're ready to die. Ready to die for me. It isn't fair. It should make everything stop. The whole world should stop and point at that. But it doesn't. Everything just rolls on. The world forgets, and I have to pretend like their sacrifice isn't a cruel, heartbreaking joke."
Another coin dropped into his satchel of worries. The last one. The heaviest one. He covered his face with his hands and felt Jaina touch his wrists lightly, pulling his arms down again. Her eyes were glossy, her mocking smile gone. She ducked her head a little, bringing them face to face.
"You're young too, Anduin. And if you need Jerek to help you remember that, then yes, I understand."
Jaina let go and took a small step back.
"I was here tonight too, right? Red-handed.
At least you can show your face," Anduin said. "I just can't. Part of why I need this is because it means I'm not me for a while. I'm dumb, sloppy, probably a shit-shoveler Jerek."
Jaina nodded and gestured to the end of the wall, where it gave way to the stables. "I'll find another doorstep to darken. Go back inside, Jerek. You've had a long day."
Chapter 25. Dazar'alor. They left Zakhan behind in the Zakhar'alor with Talanji's personal physicians, the priests and shaman, who attended to any member of her family or the Zanchuli Council. Bwamsumdi could make his own way to the palace, but Talanji urged her ravisaur, Zina, to her greatest speed. The beast took the stairs four at a time, carrying the queen to her chambers with Gonk's own swiftness. Night would soon give way to dawn, but Talanji felt no closer to victory. In fact, she only felt closer to death, which meant closer to the Maw. Bwamsumdi had said it cost him dearly to keep troll souls from the Maw, and it cost her dearly just to walk now, every step a chore. Her heavy heart did nothing to ease the pain surging through her body. They had lost too many trying to protect the final shrines. Dark Rangers had helped lay the traps that defeated her warriors, and her old dear friend had been spotted among the Widow's Bight. No, not just among them, leading them.
"We saw a witch with the rebels,"
one of the surviving Restari guards reported while the healers covered poor, burned Zakan in salve.
"She was misshapen with injury and wore strange garb, but I have seen her face in the palace countless times before, my queen. It was a Pari. I would know the look of her anywhere."
A Pari. Talandi reached her chambers and decreed to the guards she would be taking no visitors. One would arrive, of course, but he did not need a door. While she waited for Bwamsamdi to appear, Talandi drifted to the bed, wishing she could simply sleep and dream and try to forget the horrors that seemed to multiply by the hour. Once she considered Sylvanas an ally, and now the Banshee Queen's forces emboldened rebels trying to tear down Talanji's rule. That stung, but a Pari's betrayal. Talandi sighed, sitting heavily on the mattress and removing her crown. She rubbed at her aching forehead with both hands. As girls, they had been a couple of pests, running wild in the halls of the Great Seal, causing trouble wherever and whenever they wanted. They had perfect immunity. Talandi's princess status granted them more power than any child should have. They played pranks in the gardens, splashed in the pools, stayed up late every night, and lay on their backs staring up at the stars, spinning prophecies for each other. When they were grown, Apari's loyalty never wavered, though she had every right to be jealous of Talanji's status and riches.
"Even Yasma," Talandi murmured. "Even after all that."
Apari's mother, High Priestess of the Lower Shadra, the crown's own spy mistress, had fomented rebellion too, conspiring with Zul to overthrow Rastakhan and end his line. But Apari stood by Talandi. She disowned her own mother and chose the crown's side. So what changed? What drove her to this? Her last image of Apari was one of paralyzing pain. It was the day King Rastakhan died at the hands of the Alliance. Gnomish siege weapons assaulted the Great Seal, walls crumbling, ceilings caving in. Reports had come that her father was facing the Alliance himself, hopelessly outnumbered, and Talandi had raced to aid him, pelting through the halls, dodging debris and danger as she tried to save her father. That was when she last saw Apari. Her friend had been pinned under a fallen pillar, blood trailing from her lips, her eyes bugging from her skull as she strained to push the stones off her lower body. Her mouth seemed to move on its own, as if in prayer. Her voice was hoarse as her weak gaze found Talandi.
"Help me, Tali. Help. I can't move."
Talandi had only paused for a moment, weighing impossible scales. Her best friend, or her father.
"I am a princess," she had thought. "My first duty is to my family and to our rule."
She left Apari there, choosing Rastakhan.
"I will send someone for you, Apari,"
Talandi had shouted as she ran.
"Hold on!"
Then the memory collapsed, time distorted. The experience of finding her father's nearly lifeless body corrupting what came before and after. She remembered screaming and pointing at a royal guard at one point. But had it been for Apari? Had she forgotten, in all the chaos, to help her dying friend?
"I've failed so many," she whispered.
"Ah, but my queen, there is still time to protect me and your kingdom."
Bwamsamdi. Talandi lifted her head slowly, finding him there by the door. All but a ghost, the golden columns behind him perfectly visible. just raising her head, took monumental strength, as if her skull were now made of lead. Her neck ached, her back splintered in agony in four places. His power was fading. Fading because she had rashly sent her troops to defend the shrines without a plan. And now her power faded too, her life intertwined with his by no wish or action of her own. It would take too much energy to hate him.
"Please," she murmured. I feel so lost. Please let me see my father. He would know what to do. I promise to protect you, but I cannot do it alone. Summon his spirit, Bwamsamdi."
He floated closer, a grim frown etched across his face, and Talanji dreaded his refusal. Shuffling to the balcony, she beheld her crumbling kingdom. Would Thrall even return? Perhaps if word reached him that his ambassador had nearly been killed in the shrine assault, he would reconsider his offer to bring support. If that was so, they were truly lost. She gripped the railing, digging her nails into the soft gold. The nail on her middle finger cracked, blood oozing through the gap. And of course, Bwamsamdi followed, lingering behind her, emitting his bleak aura of decay.
"You need to find your own strength,"
he rasped, his voice as weak as his image.
"Your own way. The Zandalari way,"
Talanji scoffed.
"It failed. I failed. Like I failed my father. Like I failed Epari and Zekan. It might sound strange coming from the lower of graves, but there is always hope, Your Majesty."
Bwamsamdi joined her, his eyes glowing faintly behind his bone mask.
"Death brings life. The great wheel turns, slowly, yes, over eons, but it turns. Bodies decay and new life springs from it. All things that seem eternal end, then rise to find new purpose."
Talanji gazed up at him, her heart beating faster.
"Then, my father..." "You're not listening, child. You're only hearing what you want to. There is a harmony to things, a way and a flow. Ancient ones, spirits, lower. In time, we too must embrace the end. The long, deep slumber. And without us, our followers find strength in other things, in themselves, or new beliefs. They grieve, they grow, just like you. And when the veil of dreaming lifts, the eternal and great beings climb on the wheel once more, bound to it, and slowly, ever so slowly, the wheel spins."
He paused, waiting until she locked eyes with him.
"In that way, the ancient and powerful things of this world are eternal, Your Majesty."
"Zandala,"
she breathed. The fires burned in the jungle. Smoke rose above the trees. Out there, hidden in the shadows, the Dark Rangers and Apari with her Widow's Bite fanatics plotted their next move.
"It is not lost. It is never lost."
The Loa nodded, his frown at last dissolving into a familiar smirk.
"I am weak, but not gone. They will try to take the necropolis now, my place of power. Stop them there, and I will help ya rebuild this land.
But I cannot do it alone.
Talanji whispered, frail. How she wished she could speak to her father, just for a moment. But Rustakhan himself had failed many times, his complacency and neglect bringing about the darkest times of their rule. It brought her no joy to think ill of her father, and so instead she chose to think better of something else.
The ancient and powerful things of this world are eternal.
And so was hope.
The Horde will come,
Talanji murmured, turning away from Bwamsamdi to survey her lands. They burned, they struggled, and she would worry every moment until they were safe. But they were hers, a queen's to protect, a queen's to honour.
Once, she said softly, I left my home, desperate to save this place. I risked my pride and my life, and I turned to the Horde, and they answered my call. They did not let Zandala stand alone. Tonight, the Horde ambassador did not let my people stand alone. He nearly gave his life to save our children. I have to risk my pride and my life once more. I have to believe the Horde will stand with us again to fight this darkness, to raise a light together and banish the shadows from Zuldazar forever.
Chapter 26 Nazmir.
Did you have your fun?
Sira Moonwarden pushed off from the damp, crooked tree trunk and snorted. Fun? She had lost the meaning of the word when she rose anew in undeath. In the shallow clearing off the road, the Widow's Bite leader spoke in low tones to her followers. They were in a celebratory mood. The shrines had fallen. More had come to join the Widow's Bite in the wake of their campaign, their numbers swelling to more than 40 trolls and 20 dark rangers. Apari did not have armaments for them all, but the dark rangers provided daggers and bows. Their blades were sharp, their spirit undeniable. All that remained was the final assault on the necropolis, and then they could finally leave wretched Zandalar for Sylvanas Windrunner's side, their task complete. Victory made her bold. She ignored Nathanos.
Those theatrics with the children,
Nathanos clarified, stepping deliberately in front of her, blocking her path.
I trust it sated your bloodlust for the moment.
Behind him, a blood-red dawn broke, bathing the necropolis in a crimson glow. Swarms of flies, thick enough to eat a man whole, gathered above the quaggy water separating them from the Zubal ruins. The combined Dark Ranger and Widow's Bite contingencies avoided the direct road, wary of alerting any remaining Rastari enforcers of their whereabouts.
I never took you for a man with a weak stomach, Blightcaller.
Nathanos rolled his eyes, one hand resting on a dagger tucked in his belt, the other fiddling with the feathers of an arrow sticking out from his hip quiver.
You risk galvanizing the Zandalari to greater purpose. Our plans have proceeded nicely because the Queen is isolated. Grant her a few orc battalions and our odds change significantly.
They have lost, she replied bluntly. The storms will cut off any reinforcements by sea, and our traps will slow any soldiers arriving by land.
To punctuate her point, she shrugged and removed her helmet, rotting fragrantly inside the clammy metal dome. Nathanos took a few steps toward the dusty path leading to the Zabal ruins. They had already sent scouts ahead. Now they waited on a reply.
Is this not the hell our queen seeks to correct? Is this not the hell she will save us from? Teldrassil burned. Darkshore burned.
I assure you, far more than 2 screaming brats were killed.
Indeed, Sirrah, you have made your point. Ah, here is Visrin.
Their forward party returned, Visrin and Lelias emerging from the shadows with their hoods drawn up high over their heads. Visrin's wrist was held together with a tight bandage. Removing her hood, she pointed back the way they had come. Mist hugged the ground, partially obscuring the mire and the fragments of stone littering the path to the necropolis. There was only one safe approach: to secure the Zabal ruins and use the passable bridge through the murky water to get at the temple itself. Among the mist, Sirrah spied what looked like paler wisps, ghosts or spirits, echoes of Bormsamdi's followers drawn to his seat of power.
There is a small standing force. The queen must have sent them, Visrin reported, her eyes shining brightly against the red flowers tattooed on her face. But we outnumber them.
They do not stand a chance, sir, Lelias agreed. The camp is largely pilgrims. We could take prisoners and forego bloodshed.
Sirrah fidgeted with her helmet, displeased.
You have thoughts, Sirrah?
Nathanos drawled, clearly poking at her.
They should suffer as we suffer, Sirrah replied.
The round red moon hanging above them drew her gaze, and she spat.
Unlife's only pleasure is to spill blood before Ilun. The goddess did not save me. I wonder, will anyone come to save this Loa?
A pity there are only a handful of soldiers and pilgrims to dispatch.
Nathanos plucked the glove from his right hand and gave a short whistle. The celebrating in the clearing died down, and slowly the Widow's Bite rebels came to mingle with them near the road. Apari could hardly walk, but she held her head high, that loathsome little tick perched on her shoulder. A distinct odour of infection came with her, and Sirrah could see the other Zandalari trying not to hold their noses around her and visibly keeping their distance.
The ruins are ours to take,
Nathanos announced.
Prepare yourselves. I shall tolerate a short rest once we secure the ruins and make camp before our final assault.
The trolls swarmed to the east, following Visrin and Lelias as they led the charge. Apari stood before them, her face and hair damp with sweat behind her unsettling mask. It made for a wretched sight, yet the troll smiled with a beatific calm, watching her troop stalk toward the ruins under the blood moon.
You do not look well, Sirrah remarked. Lelias is a skilled healer. She can ease the pain of your leg.
Apari trembled, her green skin patchy and pale. It looked as if even drawing breath gave her great discomfort. But the troll waved her off.
No, that will not be necessary.
Her bodyguard, Teo, flinched.
The Widow's Bite are loyal to you and you alone,
Sirrah continued impatient. The troll's pride astounded her. Such foolishness would lead her to an early grave.
We need you to survive until the Loa is no more.
Behind her mask, Apari's eyes danced bright.
That is all I live to see,
Apari replied.
Bormsamdi's end, and the traitor queen powerless.
Startled shouts rose from the ruins, the ambush beginning as the rebels overran the small encampment, and the dark rangers circled the perimeter, drawing their bows and finishing any who tried to escape. There were more civilians pouring out of the ruins than Sirrah expected. A young male troll draped in furs appeared between a gap in the wall, wedged himself free, and sprinted toward them. Orange hair mussed from sleep, blood splattered across his face and tusks. Sirrah donned her helm once more and drew her crescent glaives. The troll neared the hiding spot off the road, so close that Cirra heard his frantic breathing as he hurled himself away from the carnage.
"Another one for you, Cirra,"
Nathanos said, bending down to pick up his pack, preparing to join the others in the ruins.
"Perhaps allow him one last piss in peace before you strike. One more soul for the more."
Cirra's curved blades flashed with ruthless precision, and the troll's head fell to the ground, his look of terror frozen there, his body slumping into the bushes at their feet. While his head still rolled away, Cirra stepped over his torso, matching Nathanos's easy stride. It was time to claim yet another small victory.
"Not much of a prize for your mistress," Cirra murmured,
inspecting the broken pillars and vine-covered walls of Zabal. There were no more screams from within the ruins. All had gone quiet, and then the Widow's Bite trolls began singing and a fire was lit, the smoke rising high above the fractured columns.
"But everything in this accursed jungle is pathetic. Destroying it would feel like a favor."
Nathanos shook his head, pausing outside the entrance of the camp. Bodies littered the ground. They had suffered no casualties on their side, though several Widow's Bite members were being treated for wounds near the building fire. Apari and Teo went ahead, joining their singing and dancing kin.
"Every victory we hand her matters,"
Nathanos told Cirra bluntly. The flames reflected in his eyes, flickering and hot.
"I claim this one with pride, just as I will claim the necropolis and destroy Bwamsamdi. He will no longer be a threat to Sylvanas. Little stands in her way now, and soon nothing will. Nothing ever stands in her way for long."
Nathanos Blightcaller had no use for sleep. The fragile, still-living bodies of the Widow's Bite trolls, however, required it. Even the witch Apari and her faithful bodyguard found a corner to claim and a wall to nestle against. The tarnished badge Nathanos had given Apari to fuel her magic against the shrines glinted around her neck. Many times, he considered taking it back from her, either stealthily or with force. But each time, he heard the silken whisper of his queen, urging him to let such things go.
"Trinkets and trifles," her voice reminded him. "The impermanent, unimportant relics of life."
His loyalty to Sylvanas did not hinge upon such things, even without a physical reminder of their bond. Nathanos considered it a tangible thing, as real as the stones beneath his feet and the sludgy water lapping at his boots and the cricket song filling the swamp. He patted his coat pocket, feeling again the vial there. Now that he had given his badge away, it was the only gift from Sylvanas that remained in his possession. Dark rangers kept watch, posted at the corners of the ruins, sinking into the shadows with their dark hoods pulled low over their faces. They too had no need to rest and stood as silent sentinels, as unmoving as the statues carved into the stone pillars of Zabal. To the north, waiting upon its own small island, the necropolis rose, its pronged central tower spearing up toward the blood moon as if its arms were raised in supplication. He wandered to the edge of the broken bridge that once joined the Zabal ruins to the necropolis and its large, open court. They could still pass unimpeded, the water no deeper than his ankles. Still, something kept him from venturing farther across the shattered bridge. Always on the eve of battle, he felt restless, but this was something else. He felt the hounds of memory biting at the heels of his mind, something invisible and dangerous pursuing him. It was good that he did not sleep, for he knew it would only invite tormenting nightmares. The winds there howled as if in pain. He had a letter to write, a message for Sylvanus, letting her know of their progress and their impending victory. But something in the stirring mist called to him. An archway yawned open at the center of the necropolis temple. Blue flames glowing at its corners like eyes. Eyes that saw him and knew him. Eyes that sent a chill down his spine.
Hello, Nathanos.
A coin splashed into the water near his feet. Nathanos hunched and then crouched, reaching down to fish the sliver of gold out of the muck. He traced his thumb across its face, revealing a familiar etching.
You are not real,
Nathanos said, both to the coin and to the voice. But when he stood and turned, he came face to face with his cousin, Stefan Maris.
You died a long time ago.
It was like looking into a forgiving mirror. Stefan had always been the more handsome of the two of them, with twinkling hazel eyes and a thick mop of dark hair that turned auburn at the edges. He had lips prone to smirking, dimples carved around his mouth, hiding in his beard. His skin still held the ruddy pink hue of a living man, further proof that this was only a hallucination of some kind. Stefan Maris was long dead, ending as little but a greasy smear on a table, his body the raw materials that built Nathanos anew, and in Stefan's image.
My one regret.
Why did you let her do it?
Stefan asked softly.
I was your cousin, Nathanos. I looked up to you. I wanted to be you, but not like that. Not like this.
The gold coin in his palm had the weight of the real thing. He sighed and closed his fist around it. When his cousin Stefan was just a young lad, Sylvanus had given him the coin, a gift to fund his first sword. Stefan always wanted to be a paladin and serve the Silver Hand, and had indeed achieved his dream, a dream that was soon ended when he became the clay to shape and rebuild Nathanos. His body had been ripped to shreds by an abomination, and then he had risen as a thrall of the Scourge, a mindless ghoul until Sylvanus freed him from that fate. The process had left him renewed in undeath, but in a mangled body that grew ever weaker. Sylvanus sought to repair that crumbling form, and used Stefan to do so.
I had no choice,
Nathanos replied, unable to meet his cousin's eye.
My bones were falling from their sockets, my sinews torn and useless. I needed a new body.
When you stole my flesh,
Nathanos flinched.
Sylvanus made that decision. I could not be made whole without the sacrifice of a family member.
Stefan shook his head sadly, regarding Nathanos not with rage or disgust, but pity.
And yet, still you serve her. After what she did to me, after what she did to our family. I am the only ghost that moves you. But how many ghosts have you given others? How many men now live, tormented by the loved ones you murdered in service to your vicious queen?
Whatever guilt he felt over Stefan's end vanished. Nathanos stared back, suddenly emboldened.
Did you know?
Stefan taunted, his face changing slightly, no longer so friendly or handsome, an odd blue light suffusing his skin.
Your queen has made some nasty friends on the other side. The power she has been granted can be taken away. The Lords of Death will never let her win. Her power is nothing next to theirs. As she is chained to undeath, she is chained to the forces of the Shadowlands.
You know nothing of it, Nathanos spat. You do not know her as I do.
He squeezed his hand, obliterating the coin put there by trickery and magic.
Wamsumdi. Of course.
Stefan's face dissolved into a hideous, grinning skull, a white bone mask hovering in the place where his cousin had been.
You are in my world now, boy.
Wamsumdi jeered.
This be my game, and we be playing it with my rules. Good luck to ya.
You're finished,
Nathanos replied, cold.
We be seeing about that.
With that, the Loa, or the vision he had sent, vanished into a twist of mocking laughter. Nathanos sneered, returning to the ruins with his hand still tightened into a fist. There was work to be done, a letter to write. He roused a dark ranger posted at the ruins' entrance, her red eyes the only part visible in the darkness.
Make yourself ready. I need you to deliver a message. In 1 hour you depart for the Banshee's Wail,
Nathanos instructed her.
One more precaution, he thought. Like it or not, we are in Wamsumdi's territory. Have our mounts at the ready. I refuse to meet my end in this swamp.
Chapter 27 Dazar'alor.
They have taken Zobal, my queen. Blightcaller and his rangers have been sighted moving on the necropolis. What are your orders?
Perfectly still, Talanji's eyes fixed on the road ahead, the shaded avenue that led through the Zakalo to the old merchant road, and then deep, deep into the green crush of the jungle, taking them over bridges and past waterfalls, down steep hills, to the river marsh, to the Zul'jin ruins. At the end of that path, many miles of marching away, the destiny of her people awaited. Zolani shifted.
My queen? Then there is no more time,
Talanji at last replied.
One last push, she told herself. Patch yourself up. Find your last shred of strength. Hold your head high. Let your people see it. March. We march on the necropolis. Alone.
It was difficult to find her voice. She had spent a sleepless night kneeling beside Sakan on his cot, listening as Rastari enforcers, reserves, and what volunteer militia could be roused arrived to round out their forces. Sakan twisted in his sleep, mumbling of spirits and shadows, his body covered in thick bandages applied by her priests. At some point in the night, she had drifted off, one arm resting on the bed, her head pillowed there, dreaming of the mighty horde battalions that would be waiting outside come morning. But her dream was just that, a dream. Thrall had not returned, and with much pain, Talanji washed and dressed, preparing for battle, schooling her face into an expressionless mask, knowing that when she beheld her forces in the Zakalo, it would be an underwhelming sight.
Is this all?
She had asked Rakan and Zolani. 40 soldiers. Hardly enough to guarantee victory against the sly, skilled rangers of Sylvanas.
So few. Many refuse to come,
Rakan informed her grimly.
The widow's bite took hostages, made threats. The Dazar'alor quakes, afraid of their wrath. That ends today,
Talanji said. She meant it. Either they managed to chase the rangers from their shores and disbanded the widow's bite, or the rebels won, and they would bring their chaotic rule to the Great Seal until the Horde came to avenge her. At least she hoped. Perhaps they would not even do that.
I waited too long. This is the cost of my pride. We should go now,
Zalani advised,
before it grows too hot for marching.
Give the signal,
Talanji agreed. It was time to decide their fate. Even though she felt like a walking corpse, it was time. The others had noticed her state, of course, but nobody dared suggest she was too frail to lead.
Rakan swung himself up onto his armored raptor, daggers glistening on his belt. He had wrapped leather straps studded with spikes around his great tusks for the occasion. Behind him, the pyramid sparkled in the morning sunlight, sleepy merchants and nobles beginning their day, oblivious to the gravity of the moment. Rakan blew the war horn. Her warriors shouted their response, and the Zandalari army followed her to war.
I will keep my promise to you, Bwamsamdi, though it may mean the end for us both.
They had passed beneath the magnificent golden arch of the Zakalo when a second, softer war horn blew in the distance.
Did you hear that?
Zolani reined up her raptor, turning it back toward the city. Talanji spurred her own mount, Zina, down the column of Zandalari soldiers, riding ahead of Zolani and Rakan. She crossed the bridge back into the city, reaching the other side to hear another horn blast, this one closer. The tops of banners crowning the spikes appeared, the ground beneath her shaking rhythmically. From the zigzagging ramps of the Great Seal Pyramid, War Druid Loti, green hair flying behind her, raced toward Talanji. Breathless, she skidded to a stop beside Talanji's raptor, just as the first banners cleared the tops of the stairs leading up from the bazaar and port below.
The Horde! They just started appearing, Your Majesty!
I see them, Loti.
Talanji didn't bother suppressing her joy.
There's more!
War Druid Loti finally caught her breath.
People are going mad in the markets. They think it's an invasion.
Talanji had feared as much. With the storms raging around Zandalar, any travel into the continent would have to be by magical means. Thrall must have used portals to transfer the troops.
Find Lashk. Go with him to the bazaar. Quell whatever fears you find there, and then join us at the necropolis.
Loti fled without another word. There would be challenging times ahead, Talanji realized, for even if they succeeded in protecting the necropolis, her city had suffered greatly from the Widow's Bite meddling, threatening, and spreading false rumors. But first, Bwamsamdi must be protected, and the efforts of Sylvanas and Apari halted. Riding swiftly to meet the vanguard, Talanji encountered Thrall atop an armored grey wolf, red and black horde banners hoisted behind him. First Arcanist Thalissra could be seen riding among the soldiers, radiant in purple and blue, silver feathers shining on her pauldrons, a small host of Nightborn elves marching in the wake of her mana sabre. Her presence explained the portals and the speed with which the horde had arrived. And last, but certainly welcome, the Tauren chieftain, Bane Bloodhoof, joined them, accompanied by several shaman in elaborate headdresses, totems the size of tree trunks strapped to their backs. It was, in all, a company of no more than what Talanji herself could muster, but that doubled their odds.
You came, she greeted Thrall, beaming. I thought...
Forgive the lateness,
he replied. He wore a war harness that crisscrossed his chest, and his usual battered leather gauntlets and greaves, an axe held in his right hand. His wolf shook out its great head, whining a little, and Thrall ruffled the fur on his forehead.
Easy, Moonpaw. This is all that could be gathered without leaving Orgrimmar undefended. It put considerable strain on Thalissra to teleport all of us here. Will it be enough?
Talanji inclined her head respectfully.
It will have to be. It is far more than we had. Thank you.
Zandalar will not forget this.
Bane lifted the warhorn he had brought to his lips and blew twice. The orc warriors, Torin Shaman, and Nightborn archers marched faster and together. Talanji, Thrall, Bane, and Thalissra gathered to lead the Horde forces towards Zakalo, there to meld with the Zandalari army.
How many cavalry?
Bane asked, immediately to business.
Only us, Rokan and Zolani. War druid Loti will ride to the necropolis when my people have been assured that this is not an invasion,
Talanji explained. Thrall nodded, bobbing in the saddle of his wolf.
Perhaps with our forces divided, we can attack from two sides. Send the cavalry up the center and try to trap Blightcaller in the middle.
That will be difficult, Talanji warned him. The necropolis is surrounded by swamp. The safest approach is from the Zubal ruins, which Blightcaller holds.
That will pose no challenge to our shaman,
Bane interjected.
They can pass on top of the water.
And with some recovery, I can teleport a number of us wherever you desire,
Thalissra said in her soft yet direct way. It will increase the element of surprise.
No surprises here, Talanji told her. If you reach the necropolis, there is a clear view in every direction.
Then speed will be our greatest asset,
Thrall said. He twisted to regard Thalissra, who looked weary, her shoulders slumped, her hands only loosely gripping the reins of her feline mount.
How long? Could you send some of our warriors ahead?
Thalissra straightened and quirked her lips to the side.
I shall endeavor to try.
They crossed the bridge beyond the Great Pyramid and west of the terraces, the Zandalari forces visible down the road. Rakan had kept the trolls marching, the colored frills of their feathered helmets dancing with each step. A million thoughts and ideas assaulted Talanji's brain. Thrall's arrival had changed everything. She should have believed. She should have trusted. That her eventual trust in him had brought this boon filled her with hope. Perhaps Bwamsamdi was right. All the broken hearts, spirits, and minds in her kingdom could be mended if only the proper effort was put forward. Friends and allies made, bonds and promises honored and kept. They had come for her people, in the hour when she needed them most. They had come even after she refused their well-meaning aid and their ambassador.
Zakan was badly wounded, Talanji blurted. He tried to lead my men and defend one of the lowest shrines. He was caught in a blaze in the tar pits. My healers have seen to him. They say he will live.
He is a strong boy,
Thrall replied simply.
And if he volunteered to lead, then he understood the risks.
Talanji nodded. Still, her thoughts wouldn't quiet down. How would they ever reach the necropolis in time? How could they organize a proper attack when every minute of hesitation might cost them? How could she so much as lift her staff when her body felt so broken?
Thalissra, how many of us could you safely bring to the necropolis?
Bane asked. He rode atop a towering, furry beast, a kind of stag with pale horns as impressive as Bane's. They were a motley assortment of folk and animals, and Talanji wondered what they must look like, strange allies tied by a common cause.
And how quickly,
he added with a huff.
Why do I get the sense you're annoyed with me, Bloodhoof?
Thalissra said with a lilting tease to her voice.
Those pretty feathers of yours will droop in the jungle heat. It is not a short march,
he snorted. Fair point. The first arcanist uncorked a flask tucked into a pocket of her elaborate rune saddle, taking a long swig. Her eyes brightened as if she had taken a drink of pure light. Give me a moment, and I can teleport the entire host. Thrall banged his fist on the pommel of his saddle, and the grey wolf beneath gave a long, chilling howl.
Then it is settled. We divide into three forces and give them no chance to retreat.
You see,
Talanji frowned.
The necropolis lies along our northern border. They could escape by sea. The storms surrounding these lands are under their control.
That is why we target their mages first, Galisra said.
And why Lothamar and Gazlo are sailing with all speed,
Thrall added, eyes fixed on the road to the north.
Once the storms break, they will cut off any retreat by sea.
Talanji couldn't help but gaze in admiration at each of them. Apparently, they had thought of everything. Perhaps that accounted for their delay in coming. Thrall leaned down in his saddle, sending a warrior running ahead to speak with Rakan and stall the Zandalari armies, preparing them for Thalissra's magic to whisk them away.
Then it is settled,
Talanji echoed Thrall's words.
They will soon know the strength of the Horde.
For Zandalar,
Thrall agreed, raising his axe.
And for the Khan.
For the safety of my people,
Talanji agreed.
And for the Horde.
Chapter 28. The Necropolis.
Where is he?
Cirra Moonwarden demanded, stalking in tight circles around the altar facing the Necropolis Temple. Her temper flared as high and red as the blood moon, only then fading into the dawn light.
Why does he not appear?
Nathanos allowed a cooler mood to prevail, studying the scattered carvings and drums on the altar. Perhaps they had missed something. Every shrine of Bonsamdes had been desecrated. Surely that would be enough to enrage the Loa and inspire him to retaliate. Yet an eerie silence persisted in the necropolis, that whispering, taunting wind still swirling in unnatural configurations, the suggestion of spirits hiding at the corner of his vision. He would not be denied victory, the Banshee Queen's victory, when it seemed so tantalizingly close.
You must know Bwamsamdi is a trickster.
Apari slumped toward them, her tick pet pulsating like a boil on her shoulder. She drew her greasy white braid of hair over one shoulder and gestured toward the pit on the other side of the altar. It formed a kind of amphitheater, or court, and it seethed with dark promise. Even Nathanos found its presence unnerving.
Where is he, witch?
Cirra demanded, impatient.
I honor our friendship,
Apari assured her, smiling.
I honor our bargain. Ha! We are not friends. Do not waste our time with flattery. We desire only the Loa. How do we summon him?
Cirra crowded the witch, looming, her crimson eyes flashing behind her strange horned helm. Apari did not shrink away, but her bodyguard Teo bared her teeth. They were filed into hideous points.
Like this.
Nathanos had assumed Apari sending her rebels into the temple had been only to scavenge for offerings and treasure. Instead, he found them returning in groups, bringing with them bound and squirming hostages.
Supplicants,
Nathanos murmured.
Yes, this will do nicely. These are Bwamsamdi's faithful worshippers,
Apari explained. The Widow's Bite fanatics had rounded up six, two old troll females, three elderly troll males, and a young troll girl no older than 9. The child would go last, and only if Bwamsamdi had a mind to resist.
That one first.
Nathanos pointed to an older troll male, his hair stark white, his ears drooping from time, and the heavy bone jewellery adorning them. He was the strongest of them, aged but still with all his teeth and both eyes. The other elders appeared one footstep from the grave, Two rebels dressed in the white and black tunic of the Widow's Bite shouldered the old troll forward. He didn't fight.
Good morning, sir.
Darkness take you,
the troll spat. Nathanos sighed and wiped the spittle from his chin.
I see. In that case, I too shall dispense with pleasantries. There is no need to torture you and kill the child. You are Bwamsamdi's faithful, are you not? Prove your belief sufficient. Summon the lower here, and all of you will live.
Over the troll's shoulder, Cirra scoffed. Nathanos gave her the tiniest shake of his head.
Don't be stupid. Of course they will not live. What is your name?
Nathanos asked. The witch Apari circled closer, reaching into the medicine satchel around her waist and producing a small pouch.
Tezi. Very well, Tezi. Let us be reasonable. Help us reach Bwamsamdi and you will all be spared.
Tezi sighed and heaved his shoulders, eye to eye with Nathanos.
We worship the lower of death, strange one. We come each day to this place. You don't frighten us. Nothing frightens us.
Do not break, Tezi. They are scum. Bwamsamdi will protect us,
the little girl shouted. One of the rangers slapped her silent. Apari chose that moment to intervene.
Make your offering, old man, or this goes in the girl's mouth.
She reached inside the pouch and held up a pinch of black powder. Captive, the troll girl gave a yelp.
Wretch weed and riverbud root. Her insides will be coming out her eyeballs. Is that what you want?
Tezi drew back. Out of the corner of his eye, Nathanos noticed someone diving toward the witch.
She's just a child!
Teo clamped her hand around Apari's wrist, the one holding the powder. She twisted and pulled, and the weak, septic Apari had no choice but to let go. Teo threw the pouch in an arc, sending it splashing into the swamp, lost. At once, Apari struck her across the face. She didn't have much strength left, but the slap left Teo stunned.
I am on the very precipice of death, Zagota. I will live. I will live just to see Bwamsamdi and Tolanji fall. Nothing, not this girl, nor you, will stop me.
Whatever Zagota meant, Nathanos didn't fancy it was anything friendly. Teo marched away, back toward the Zabal ruins. Dark Ranger Vizrin moved to follow.
Let her go, Apari muttered.
She will come crawling back.
She always does.
We have no need of her now,
Nathanos drawled.
Now, where were we? Ah, of course. Tezi, my new friend. You will cooperate or the troll girl will be harmed. We have many resources beyond the witch's powders and potions.
Do it!
The girl screamed, unafraid. Nathanos almost admired her spirit. He drew a dagger from his belt.
For example, I will take her brash little tongue.
I will do what you ask,
Tezi growled.
But I've no more power over a Loa than a mouse over a snake.
Scamper over to the altar then, mouse, and be quick about it.
Nathanos grabbed the troll by the bone talisman around his neck and shoved him roughly toward the drums and relics strewn about the dais. Below, the mist of fog and spirit swirled, and either it was his imagination or the silvery muck had grown thicker. Was this Bwamsamdi's wrath? Even a Loa must find it difficult to stomach the mistreatment of mice such as Tezi. The old troll dropped to his knees. The girl cried out for him, and Apari cuffed her, subduing her to silent tears. Tezi picked up one of the ancient drums and began to thump it with the heels of his hands, chanting in a low, haunting rasp, his song rising and falling above the constant buzz of insects filling the marsh. It went on for some time, until Tezzy's voice grew hoarse.
Cyra paced faster. Nathanos couldn't help but concur.
We know you are watching, Bwamsumdi,
Nathanos called. Nothing.
Appear to us, Loa, or your followers will soon be walking your spirit realm.
Nothing.
The girl,
Nathanos sneered.
Start with her fingers. Flay them first. Remove them slowly. After that, the ears.
The other captured worshippers fell to their knees, joining Tezzy in his chant, but the girl simply trembled, tossing her head from side to side as she sobbed once more. Nathanos took no delight in it. This was simply what was required. The Banshee Queen wanted Bwamsumdi gone, and they could not destroy him if he remained forever in hiding.
Wait!
Cyra had come to a halt, peering over the edge of the altar and down into the court. The soup of mist and spirits began to spin, creating a vortex that shot up into the air and dispersed with a ripple, sending the columns of the necropolis shaking, unseen tombs deep in the ground rattling, the skeletons dotting the ruin shook themselves to slivers. Dust rose from the ancient stones under their feet. The blast knocked Nathanos back a few steps, his ears ringing from the force of it.
Old Bwamsumdi is here, friends. What be all this racket now?
The Loa floated high above the court, ankles crossed casually, head cocked to the side. The tall bone harness he wore on his back swayed lightly. The ribs etched into his chest glimmered like stars, streaming blue vapor rising from the slits in his bone mask. His followers gasped, falling flat onto the ground.
Dark Rangers at the ready!
Cyra screamed.
At last.
Nathanos sauntered to the edge of the altar, staring up at the larger-than-life Loa. It might have been an intimidating sight, but they had him surrounded, and the loss of his shrines would weaken him considerably. The recessed court simmered with glittering white fog again, spirits of trolls drifting out from their graves to gather around their master.
I have my own army, little dead thing,
Bwamsumdi chuckled.
And soon my queen will be here. Ya been sneaky so far, can't deny it. But you won't stand a chance against her armies.
Armies?
Cyra whispered, her eyes flying to Nathanos.
He's bluffing,
Nathanos replied calmly.
By the time she arrives, you will be destroyed. Cyra, give the command.
Fire!
Widow's Bite, my followers, my friends, no Loa of Death will rule us and corrupt our crown.
Apari's words were met with 24 war cries. The arrows began to fall, screaming toward Bwamsumdi from dark rangers circling the court.
Ya be in my world now, my house,
Bwamsumdi thundered, lifting his skeletal hands high. His arms shook, his image flickering like a dying candle about to sputter out. The spirits massing around him charged at terrifying speed, rolling out from him like a grisly tide. They swarmed the narrow stairs leading up from the pit, more resistance than Nathanos had anticipated. On the east side of the court, he watched Vizrin and Elias spring back on agile feet, firing into the mob of spirits while the Widow's Bite rebels joined in with slings, bows and blowguns. Apari let her head drop back on her weak neck, raising shaking arms to the clouds, calling down a surge of lightning that struck the stones between the rangers and the mass of spirits.
Destroy him!
Nathanos roared, reaching for his own longbow.
For Sylvanas!
Chapter 29.
Nazmir.
The Horde leadership arrived first, landing outside the Zabal ruins on animals agitated from the unusual journey.
Whoa there!
Talanji soothed Xena, stroking the raptor's coarse scales. A single fall from the saddle and Talanji might be done for.
Find your feet. There is war to be waged.
At that, the raptor let loose a shrill bellow. Thrall's wolf joined in the call. The first arcanist dismounted from a mana saber, batting away a bothersome cloud of gnats with an elegant hand.
Go to the ruins. Our armies will follow.
Will you be all right alone?
Bane asked from atop his painted and beaded thunderhoof. Oh yes, I am quite capable. Thalissera nodded.
Go!
As if to punctuate her haste, a crack of lightning rippled down from the sky, hitting somewhere inside the necropolis.
They are already attacking him!
Talanji cried, urging Xena to carry her towards Zabal.
There is no more time!
Thrall and Bane raced toward the necropolis with her. The ground shook, not from the lightning this time, but from the combined weight of 20 orc warriors, armed and thirsty for a fight, landing in the road. Talanji glanced over her shoulder as they rode. Rakan and her vanguard of Rastari enforcers and civilian militia arriving next. They immediately broke into a run, following the cavalry through the central approach to Zabal, through the ruins and across the shattered bridge leading to the necropolis. Bane's shaman and the orc troops would continue east down the road, then swing north and cross the swampy barrier with their power to walk across the water. Lastly, Thalissera's nightborn archers would head immediately north toward the necropolis, taking the western approach, teleported into the battle once the first wave of screaming orcs and magic-wielding shaman had ambushed the enemy.
Stop! You must stop!
Thrall had almost trampled the troll that popped out from behind a fall of rocks in the open courtyard of Zabal. The orc drew his axe, and Talanji summoned a crackling bolt of death magic to her hands, recognizing the ugly black and white spider design on the troll's tunic. The Widow's Bite. She was thin but muscular, tall, with leather straps hanging from her shoulders, holstering dozens of poison darts. Her long hair had been slicked up into a tail and streaked with black mud or paint. She put up both hands in surrender and dropped to her knees.
Give me a good reason not to take your head, Thrall muttered.
My name is Teo.
The troll spoke quickly and clearly, without a hint of fear.
I served the witch Apari.
Served? Talanji pressed.
I can serve her no longer.
The troll Teo sighed.
She is not the leader I knew. The leader I admired. This cruelty is not her, and I cannot follow this Apari. Her hate for you, your majesty, is all she has.
Then fight with us,
Bane encouraged.
Help us stop her.
Teo stood, slowly, wary of Thrall's sharpened axe.
I will. All I ask is that you give her a merciful end. Death is already about to claim her. Just make it swift.
Done,
Thrall said, and Talanji bit her tongue.
The bridge is riddled with traps and mines.
Teo turned and swept her arm back toward the necropolis.
Too many to count. They knew you might come. Do not go that way.
That sounds like Blightcaller, all right.
Sheathing his axe, Thrall leapt down from his wolf and produced a few silver orbs from his pack.
A little gift from our clever trade prince.
What are those?
Talanji asked, observing from Xena's back, while Thrall set the orbs down on the ground and twisted each of them. They began to click and whir, then shot out toward the bridge, rolling so fast they became three little blurs.
Goblin seeker bots,
Thrall replied.
Be ready to charge.
The orbs cracked open halfway across the bridge, each producing six tiny contraptions shaped almost like men that bounced their way this way and that. A red light on top of each of the bots blinked frantic, then the first trap blew. Smoke and chunks of stone exploded, and then another mine was triggered, and another, until they could see nothing but a haze of debris and fire. Thrall stepped back into his stirrup and, without another moment's hesitation, rode toward the chaos. Talandi followed, squinting, Bane ahead of her and to the left. Teo joined them on foot, bringing up the rear. Talandi had no idea what to expect when they soared through the cover provided by the smoke. On the other side, Bromsamdi towered above the necropolis, gritting his teeth as he raised spirit after spirit and flung them toward his attackers. The rebels were easier to spot, the white flashes on their tunics standing out against the commotion. They had already suffered several losses, troll bodies littering the ground. Nathanos, an armored dark ranger, and Apari stood at the altar before the court of spirits, Nathanos firing on Bromsamdi,